Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios, New York City. You can watch today's show by going to Ustream channel, searching for Gary Null. We're going to discuss an anti-cancer property found in onions. Some good research from Kumamoto University in Japan, and how red meat has a chemical in it that they're finding out can really damage your organs, University of California at Davis, and how that wonderful nutrient called resveratrol can help correct hormone imbalance in women who have different conditions, including polycystic ovarian syndrome. And how a Western diet, rich in fruits and vegetables and low in meat, can help prevent macular degeneration and much more on health and healing. And then something that I've never done before, but it's a letter to a friend. And the entire rest of the program would be based upon this letter. The letter is to Michael Moore. And Michael has recently advocated for the support of Hillary Clinton, which is fine. That's his right. He's also enlisting MoveOn.org, and they're rather formidable. So I'm going to respond about what has been an ongoing pattern of those who are the liberal Democrats to suggest that we really should support just a two-party system. I'll give my response, and our scholar in residence, one of our scholars, Richard Gale, will come on to talk about what is likely the outcome of a Clinton presidency. I'll also be sharing some specific commentaries today on this issue, Outing the Prison Industrial Complex by Margaret Flowers and Kenneth Sees, and The United States War on Youth, From Schools to Debtors' Prisons by Professor Henry Giroux, and much more. Also, Jill Stein today on the program a little later, Why We Should Fight for the Greater Good and Forget About America's Two-Party System. And one of the great minds of all time, at the end of our show, Bertram Russell, on advice for future generations. And you'll see how prophetic he was in this discussion from the 1940s. I found an audio clip. Thought you would find it of interest. So we have a packed show today. Let's begin. We all should be consuming on a daily basis nutrients called cruciferous nutrients that help us prevent the body from taking a damaged cell and that damaged cell not able to repair itself. Now, all of our cells in our body are damaged, every single one. If you have 50 trillion cells, you have 50 trillion damaged cells. But because each cell is damaged about 10,000 times per day, every single cell in your body, the younger you are, the more able the body is to restore that body's cell to its normal activities. The older you become, the less energy there is to do that. There is simply not enough energy to have everything the body has to do, to have your brain think and your heart to pump, and that takes up the two of those relatively small organs, together about 5-6 pounds maximum. They're taking up over 25% of the total body energy. And that's why one of the first things that goes, not necessarily our muscles, it's our memory, and then our heart. And then we feel that we have to take it easy. Well, when we start taking it easy, and we don't change the way we're living, that damage that was done earlier by eating the hot dog, the hamburger, the french fry, the cola, the alcohol, that damaged cell then makes it much easier for it to become a cancerous cell. So when you're taking an herb like curcumin, which comes from the spice turmeric. Now, you can take the spice turmeric. That's good, but it's much better, 100 times better, to take the concentrate of curcumin, around 5,000 or 6,000 milligrams, because that's the active ingredient in turmeric. And it will help prevent that continuing damage to manifest into cancer. It's one of its wonderful properties. Green tea, black tea, oolong tea all do the same thing. Then you have the broccoli sprouts, which are more powerful than broccoli, And the best way to take your cruciferous vegetables, in my opinion, is, in fact, I just did this last night. I take all the different cruciferous vegetables that are available organic at the time of season. I steam them for only about 5 minutes. That's just enough to break down some of the harder structure. So now you can eat them in a salad or you can put them in a dish, like asparagus, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower. Kale you can use the same way. A lot of people like to eat kale raw. I don't suggest that. I suggest lightly sautéing it. A, it makes it more tasty. B, it makes it more digestible. And then you get your anti-cancer agents. You get your anti-DNA agents. They're going to protect your DNA. So the difference between two people, both the same age, one who has eaten the standard, both have eaten the standard American diet, but one stops, the other does not. Stopping will help the take the damage to your DNA from about 10,000 cell alterations per day down to probably 2,000. But then when you start eating berries and like pomegranate, you're repairing the damage to your heart and to your arteries and your lining. And it's also an anti-aging nutrient. When you start eating grapes or drinking grape juice, you're getting resveratrol and grape skin extract. That helps absolutely reverse the aging of the cell. Actually goes in there and starts, just imagine you got a hole with a sock with a big hole at the heel, and you keep wearing it. You're going to get blisters. It's going to continue to stretch. Now you go in one day and you needle and thread and you sew it up. That's what these products do. They go in and repair the damage to your DNA and protect you from further damage. Hence, two people. One stops a process and then begins to reverse it. The other doesn't stop it. Now, they both hit 40. One is going to be far more likely to die of a heart attack. One's going to be biologically about 20 years older than the other who stops. So the good news is you can reverse aging. You can reverse damage you've done earlier in life. If you're actively doing something, just stopping smoking is good, but it will not prevent lung cancer. Eventually, if you smoked, you're going to get cancer, high probability. So what you have to consider is repair. This is where taking specific foods in makes a difference. Now, this is from Kumamoto University in Japan. Here's what it says. Research from Kumamoto University, Japan, has found that a natural compound isolated from onions called oneinin, A, or O-N-A, has several anti-ovarian cancer properties. This discovery is the result of research on the effects of this O-N-A compound from onions on a preclinical model of epithelial ovarian cancer, both vivo and in vitro. This research comes from the same group that found onion also suppressed pro-tumor activation of host myeloid cells. Now, in lay language, what this means is that if you're eating onions, you're going to have a far less likelihood of developing ovarian cancer. And if you have ovarian cancer, eating onions every day can help save your life. That simple. And the onion, along with garlic, and I would use onion and garlic together. So many ways you can use onion and garlic, but the most powerful way of using onion is to use raw sweet onion. You can dice raw sweet onion into a marinade. A marinated sweet onion is delicious. You can get some orange balsamic vinegar and marinate it overnight in that, or you can make your own. In fact, I make a marinade, and then I'll put some of the cruciferous vegetables that I wrap in a green wrap that keeps them twice as long. And that green wrap, you can get it in any store. Any store you'd regularly get, any form of like a cellophane. But this allows a greater lifespan, substantially longer, putting in the green bags. So I make it for a whole week. So 20 minutes worth of work, I've got my marinade going, I've got all the cruciferous vegetables going. Then the next day, if I want a cold salad, I've got the vegetables for it. If I want something sautéed, then I have those I can just dice up and put in. But I always have onions, because onions are just one of nature's best antibacterial, antifungal, anti-cancer and antiviral agents. An onion a day keeps a stroke away. Next up, we have some new research out of the University of California, Davis, that was published in the Glycoconjugate Journal. Quote, they have found a celiac acid sugar molecule common in red meat that increases the risk of tumor formation in humans. And it's the initials are NEU5GC. So what this means is every time you're eating any form of red meat, any and all, not only is this there, but when you cook it, it increases it. So you think that you're going to eat it raw? Not a good idea. Terrible idea. You can die from eating raw meat because of all the bacteria and the viruses that are in it. So the more you cook a red meat, and have you seen any of those cooking shows that they'll put the barbecued ribs in for a whole night and come back the next day and it's there? Well, just imagine how much NEU5GC, this cancer-causing agent, is in that meat. So you also, in addition to that, you have a separate cancer-causing agent called heterocyclic amines. So that gives you two known carcinogens in every red meat that you eat. So simply stop eating red meat. All right, stop eating anything that has a heartbeat or a face. How about that? University of California, San Diego, published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Resveratrol can help correct hormone imbalance in women with PCOS, and PCOS stands for polycystic ovary syndrome. By the way, that's the leading cause of infertility in women. And yet this natural grape compound is there, and there are millions and millions of women in the United States who suffer from this. When I did my menopause support group, there were some women whose daughters were suffering from this, and they were having all kinds of problems. So I suggested resveratrol, or eating more grapes, drinking more organic grape juice. So that's important. Get your resveratrol. I suggest 100 milligrams a day. And finally, the Mediterranean diet. Such a good diet. Perfect? No. Are there better diets? Yes. But you would have to look at the Hunza diet as better, the diet on the island of Crete, which is part of the Mediterranean, but it's also unique, and the Okinawan diet. But as an overall diet, the Mediterranean diet would be first, the Japanese diet for a major group of people would be second. And if we incorporated that in the United States into our eating plan, we could help prevent, I believe, 50% of all heart attacks and strokes, diabetes, and obesity. Now, this is from the University of Coimbra in Portugal. And here, this was presented at the American Academy of Ophthalmology. They found that following a group of people who were eating the Mediterranean diet, which is a simple diet, it's high in fruits, vegetables, grains, pulses, legumes, root vegetables, starchy vegetables, they included some fish, and this was rich in vitamin C and E and beta carotene and antioxidants, that they had a substantial reduction in their age-related macular degeneration. In essence, eat the Mediterranean diet and protect your vision. Huge numbers of improvement, 54.4%. So that's terrific. Oh, and by the way, University of Oslo in Norway, a study shows low vitamin D levels are associated with increased negativity and depressive symptoms and also psychotic disorders. So make sure you're getting your vitamin D every day. It can make an enormous difference. And make sure you're exercising every day. University of British Columbia showed that exercise can benefit the elderly with memory and thinking problems. And that's one. This was presented in Neurology, the Journal of the American Academy of Neurology. I counsel a lot of people with end-stage illnesses, including Alzheimer's. I was really surprised when I saw how little exercise a person with neurological problems is engaged in. Part of the problem is understandable. If you're around people who have advanced dementia, Alzheimer's, it's difficult to get them to do anything. In fact, they may not recognize you, frequently don't. They want to argue with you. They don't want to do anything, and therefore they can become a challenge. But if you begin to exercise with them, even to walk with them each day, or get them in a swimming pool, walking in a swimming pool with you, with weights in their hands, what are called sponge weights, meaning that there's no metal in them, they're not heavy, they're light as feather, until they get water in them. And when you have these hand weights and you're working in the water and you're walking, the water absorbs into the weight, and then now 5 pounds, 10 pounds of water, and you're moving all your upper back muscles when you're walking with the weights in your hand, and you're walking with some resistance against the water, so it's good. But if you can get anyone with memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's walking an hour a day, you're doing a terrific amount of good for their brain. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a short break and come right back. Please stay with us.
You got a smile so bright. You know you could have been a candle. I'm holding you so tight. You know.
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall. You can listen to this program Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday evening for the Progressive Commentary Hour, which is the most listened to and downloaded program I do, over the telephone or any portable listening device. Let me give you that number, 701-801-3662, 701-801-3662. And if you should miss a program, you can always go to the archives, download the show off the archives, and listen to it on a portable device. You can listen over the internet, but you can also listen over any portable device, as many people do. Let me give you that number. This is strictly for listening for a program that you missed. You're at the archive, you're out and about, you want to hear it, put it on your speakerphone in your car. Here's the number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And I was just told by Jesse here at the Progressive Radio Network that we now represent 24% of all the listeners listening over the archives by phone in the world. And that's of over 10,000 different stations and people, including Sean Hannity, Laura Ingram, you know, and all the others. So a lot of people are listening live over the phone or the archives. I'm going to share something now and for the rest of the program involving a friend. He is a friend now. He's been a friend, and I'm hopeful he will be a friend in the future. But I feel I must address this. This letter is posted on my website, on my Facebook. You can download it if you wish and share it. I'll read it to you now. Dear Michael, this is to Michael Moore. I've known you for many years as a fellow film director and have admired your productions and efforts to shine a spotlight on many of the ills in our government and society. I've considered you a loyal liberal. Nevertheless, your recent wholehearted support of Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party has convinced me you're another good liberal corporatist standing in opposition to a progressive agenda for the future. It is one thing to use a moral standard to bash the federal system and the GOP. It is quite another to protect the neoliberal community and not apply the same standards to its failures and crimes. But let's say you're correct in your belief that realistic progressive change will come to fruition with another Clinton presidency. If that is the case, then how do you account and address the horde of proven progressive thinkers, activists, and visionaries who have stood up for the protections of civil society and humanitarian principles and would denounce your neoliberal ideology. Chris Hedges, Cornel West, Ralph Nader, Jill Stein, Michael Hudson, Glenn Ford, Alan Grayson, Michelle Alexander, Henry Giroux, Noam Chomsky, and others stand in opposition to your decision to come to the rescue of the Clinton corporate machinery. These are individuals who have dedicated their lives and efforts to build a conscientious citizenry that would live by moral values and restore our democracy. They advance an equitable multi-party electoral process and realize that Democrat-Republican monopoly is now an unquestionable failure. They don't bow to the amoral rhetoric of supporting lesser evils. They stand firm with the truth of the dire state of the nation and don't compromise their commitment to justice and the rights of the people over the influence and wealth of the elite who the Clintons represent. It may require another two or three presidential rounds before we have a candidate on an independent ticket viably challenging the duopoly status quo. If you had supported Ralph Nader vocally and fully, we may not be facing the dismal choice between Clinton and Trump today. You may have helped boost a third party into the playing field that is so necessary at this moment in America's history. We might not be confronting our increasing exploitation of labor, minorities, women, and those in poverty. What is most disconcerting is that you would ask those of us who truly embrace progressive, nonpartisan humanitarian values to support the Democrats' anointed candidate. How can any of us who have been at the forefront of social change, who sympathize with the youth of the Occupy movement, and have sympathy for the collapsing conditions in our poorest neighborhoods, within our inner cities in rural America, possibly support a woman who wants to expand nuclear armament at a time of $1 trillion cost to it and the implications for using it, who has stated she would not take the nuclear option off the table against either Russia or Iran, a woman on record to expand NATO's presence in order to surround and contain Russia, hence a new World War III, Cold War, who has confirmed her commitment to a no-fly zone in Syria, which even the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under Obama has stated may be equivalent to a declaration of war against Russia. After witnessing Hillary's debacle in Libya, transforming Africa's most progressive Islamic nation with the highest standard of living to an economic basket case, how can we not be outraged at her support for aggressive actions in Syria to remove Assad? Libya under Gaddafi was the jewel of Africa, recognized as such by international government bodies. Libyan women were the best educated, had the most freedoms in the Muslim world. Libya didn't have a noticeable debt, no crime, and there was complete religious freedom aside from radical jihadism, which Gaddafi abhorred and repressed. Libyans had universal health care, free education, and all married couples were provided with home ownership because these were recognized as universal human rights. Compared to the United States, we are a banana republic. And yet, your allegiance to Clinton, along with Bill Maher, is a commitment to the violence of the Obama administration. With Clinton as Secretary of State, they have waged war on Libya, now Syria, with countless civilian deaths, and more than 30 million people in both countries displaced. No progressive, no true liberal worthy of the title could support war hawks such as Henry Kissinger, Madeleine Albright, Robert Kagan, Donald Rumsfeld, and George Bush, yet each of these has publicly announced their support for Hillary Clinton. Doesn't this signal something worrisome to you? When everyone on Wall Street, the major bankers, in the pharmaceutical industry, the heads of their corporations, when the top Fortune 500 people are all voting for Hillary, should that not give you a moment of pause? Does this not hint of the future ahead with her taking the mantle of the most powerful nation in the world? Hillary has used the neocon playbook for the coup in Honduras and the Ukraine. Now both countries are in financial collapse and riddled with corruption and violence. After her success in bringing a totalitarian regime to Honduras, the country has descended into the most violent and unsafe nation in Latin America. Why? To come to the rescue of Chiquita Banan and Dole Foods, who faced decreased market share by a democratically elected president trying to improve his population's standard of living? Have you not reflected upon the cost of life, the demolition of infrastructure necessary for sustaining life in countries where we have backed and funded regime change? Now you're asking us, no, you are begging us, as you did Nader in 2000, to support Clinton. Then it was Al Gore. You're asking us to vote for a neocolonial planet ruled by Western financial interest and its Western allies, protected by American military and intelligence hegemony. You have been a champion of labor and unions. You have become one of their celebrities. Yet dozens of WikiLeaks cables show Hillary fully supported not just the Trans-Pacific Partnership and all other partnerships and treaties, including the TTIP, which would have completely eviscerated all of our rights, all of our laws, all of our sovereignty to a group that was unaccountable. And these are horrendous trade agreements. And yet 44 of the leaked cables show she was agitating on behalf of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, no matter what she says publicly. You want us to vote for her whitewashed and improved version of these treaties? And since when she has ever been fully truthful? Repeatedly, Clinton's word is not etched in gold. And for what other reason does 66% of American public distrust her? Hillary supporters are concerned, and rightly so, because where is her agenda for changing the problems with climate change? Arguably the number one problem facing the planet. The largest single polluter on the planet as a group would be the military-industrial complex, and yet they are completely exempt from any cleanup efforts. Where are her details to where she is going to reduce CO2 emissions? Pass it off to a committee? It doesn't work. We are beyond the point where we can allow politicians to say they care about the environment and then do nothing about it. All you have to do is look at 123,000 excess environmental concerns per year, meaning extreme elements, the wettest day, the worst storm, the worst typhoon, the most ferocious of the Category 5, and now going to a Category 6 hurricanes, drought. Now we're into mega droughts in more than 20 states. Where has there been a plan to protect the environment and the people in it? We now see 7 million immigrants going into Europe, going through Greece, going through Italy, trying to get into Germany and other places where they feel they could have some quality of life. Why has she taken no responsibility for causing this? Why has the media not once gone forward and said, where did these people come from? Why all of a sudden? Why now? Libya, Syria, Yemen, those are your three big reasons, and Clinton is behind them. She was one of the chief architects of the Libyan invasion, one that was not necessary, counterproductive, but someone benefited. It wasn't the people of Libya. So where's the plan? She's been a staunch supporter of nuclear power. And the myths that she perpetrates, as did Barack Obama, of clean coal and clean hydrofracking, funds and subsidies for these wasteful, polluting industries would better serve the development and promotion of innovative, clean technologies that would catapult the United States to meet the advancements made by other countries to lessen humanity's reliance upon fossil fuels. Michael, you want us to accept this. You want us to believe Clinton offers solutions for the 21st century at a time when her and the new Democrat worldview is stuck in the 20th century. In fact, she is rebirthing the Cold War mentality that should have been laid to rest in 1991. Hillary's on record supporting mass surveillance, spying upon all Americans. She fully supports the two Patriot Acts, the National Defense Authorization Act, which allows, Michael, any citizen to be arrested, killed, detained, tortured. Anything that the President of the United States wants done with a person can be done with pure immunity. And to the president, and yet never once was this voted upon by the American public. She is a full supporter of that. Also, she believes that there should be a full attack against all the whistleblowers. I believe that Manning, I believe that all of the whistleblowers are American heroes. Let's just put this in perspective. We're a country that say that we abide by laws, and therefore no one is above the law. Therefore, everyone should be held accountable to the law. And yet, the whistleblowers all did one thing only. That's all they did. They found that the institutions they were working in were violating the law. The government had broken the law. The CIA had broken the law. The National Security Agency had broken the law. They were illegally spying. They were collecting information. They were torturing us, torturing people. They were engaged in illegal activity which harmed individuals. For telling us the truth about people breaking the law, they then were told, we have to arrest them, prosecute them. Some on the left even suggested killing them because they had exposed the truth. So then the emphasis becomes on which site leaked the information, they're the enemy, versus what was leaked. What is the context of the message they're sharing? They simply told us, we're not a nation of laws. It's very arbitrary. The government is completely lawless, and we already know that. But that is what Hillary Clinton has supported. She has also sanctioned the spying on every single diplomat in the world, every world leader in the world, including her own allies at the time, Cameron and Merkel. Now, what would happen if the New York Times ran a story that all of the members of the Congress, every senator, every federal judge, every member of the U.S. Supreme Court, every member of the White House, including the president, that other countries had all of their cell phones hacked, and every single conversation they've had, private or in work, has been recorded? What would be the level of outrage? And yet no outrage when it was determined that we had done exactly that. And she supported that. She also, through her State Department, threatened other countries that there would be consequences if they did not take genetically modified foods, seeds, fully backing Monsanto's efforts. She has sanctioned the exploitation of women and cheap labor by her corporate friends at Walmart. She's a staunch supporter of genetically modified food and industrial agriculture. This is evident by the legions of former Monsanto officials and lobbyists who have been behind her campaign and her husband's administration since 1992. She also has sanctioned infiltration of peaceful protest movements and demonstrations. Hillary has not come forward to forgive student debt and is now impoverishing young adults, turning them into debt slaves. Underneath the seeming compromises of Bernie Sanders, she is not fully committed to a single-payer health care system. But hold on, didn't you deal with that in your movie Sicko? What is your position then? Is it to support universal health care, as you did, and rightly so, I believe, and well done, in Sicko? Or is it to support Hillary Clinton? Because if you're supporting Clinton and the future, you must also at the same time support everything that she's done in the past, including her own secret efforts by employing more than 450 people from the pharmaceutical, insurance, and private hospital industries to write the Clinton Health Plan, which was defeated, thank goodness, but also were part of writing Obamacare, which she was a major supporter of. So the winners, the only winners, Michael, are the corporate hounds who benefit from her political leveraging. Today we know through WikiLeaks that Hillary did not become the Democratic candidate by legitimate means. The DNC worked in collusion with her campaign and staff to undermine Bernie Sanders, who posed the greatest threat to her neoliberal corporate interest. By endorsing Hillary, you're also unintentionally endorsing everything she has done, every regressive policy she stands for, by pulling the Clinton lever in November. Lest we forget, it was Bill and Hillary Clinton as co-presidents who agreed to the sanctions in Iraq, where 500,000 to 680,000 children died, where her own friend and the head of the UN delegation and also Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, said in an interview with Leslie Stahl in 60 Minutes, "Is it worth the death of 500,000 children?" And she said yes. She was voicing your yes, Bill's yes. So I have to ask you, how can any progressive person support someone who is engaged in genocide, causing 500,000 children to die? Some of us have memories. Some of us do not forget, nor should she be forgiven. This is a woman with an army of technocrats, beltway insiders and corporate moguls, hedge fund managers, equity partnership people who are friends and bundlers for her, coexisting in a symbiotic relationship to assure the expansion of the corporate state and oligarchy, and the media and the justice system is behind her. How else can she be escaping unscathed FBI investigations that by all reasonable concerns should have seen her indicted? So imagine how greater her power will be when she and her husband and their insiders have full and total control over 16 intelligence agencies, the full military-industrial complex, and the capacity for creating all the laws that are necessary and running the Justice Department. They're all backing her. Imagine then what might come forward. America's been in an endless state of war since September 11, 2000. We have spent more than $6 trillion on this war and its continuing cost. Do you truly desire this war to rage endlessly? Is this what you envision for the country, for the world and its millions of victims? You plea for a vote for Hillary, and you demand nothing less. I hope you reconsider your position, Michael, and join us in supporting Jill Stein to build a viable, dynamic, and progressive movement that honors multiple programs, that breaks once and for all the control of the duopoly of the Democrat and Republican institutions and machines, so we at least have a viable future. Your friend, Gary Nall. And he has enlisted, as of yesterday, people to raise money. He's asking people to donate to MoveOn.org, which I might mention, since Obama's win in 2009, has become the Democrats' one of its featuring lobbying arms during election time. And it was founded by George Soros. It's raised millions of dollars through its email campaign, which is its right. And so just understand that, wouldn't that money have been better spent if you advocated for truly independent candidates to be supported so we can have platforms for the future? It's not about Jill Stein winning this time. She won't. And it's doubtful there will be any win in the future. Now, before we go to Richard Gale, I'd like for you to hear from Jill Stein.
Can't put your values into your vote, then democracy is lost at sea. We have no moral compass, and that's exactly where we are right now. People are hungering for more choices, but the American political system excels at suppressing the voices of opposition. In fact, we are probably the only major developed country that is limited to two parties. People are told over and over, don't vote your values, vote your fears. But what we got was everything we were afraid of, all the reasons you were told that you had to vote for the lesser evil, because you didn't want the massive expanding wars, you didn't want the meltdown of the climate, you didn't want the massive Wall Street bailouts, you didn't want the offshoring of our jobs. These are all things that were brought to us, signed, sealed, and delivered by a Democratic White House with two Democratic houses of Congress. We have a few things to learn about democracy in our own country, that we need to allow opposition voices and opposition political parties. That's how we get to real democracy. In a true multi-party democracy, we'd have much easier access and we would have inclusive debates. So you have many more points of view, much more diversity, and it's much harder for corporations to take control, to buy out the two parties, and basically censor and eliminate all other non-corporate points of view, like living wages, like the right to a job, like the right to free higher education. Those are critical issues, and we need an open democracy to be able to bring them into our political system. And forget the lesser evil, stand up and fight for the greater good, like our lives depend on it, because they do.
Also, I might mention that if we're looking at evil, we have to look at Saudi Arabia in its form of Wahhabism and how it has spread. Its support that we have proof of through WikiLeaks and Julian Assange of Saudi Arabia and also Qatar and United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, all and Turkey funding ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, protecting them, and then the United States under Hillary Clinton sending weapons to Qatar and others that knew that those weapons were going to be pulled back into the conflict zones in Libya, in Syria, to be used by the so-called moderates. Well, those moderates cut off the head of a young 12-year-old boy on a truck. Those moderates have raped women. Those moderates are killers. And this is actually in Hillary Clinton's emails. Also, now we have a major genocide going on in the world. The American media is rarely touching on it. It's Yemen. And who is behind it? The Minister of Defense, who is the son of the ruler of Saudi Arabia. And he is spending billions of dollars. Well, we ended up giving Saudi Arabia billions of dollars in weapons that were then used against Yemen. And Yemen's the poorest nation there. And why did the people revolt? Simply this, and we're not told this, because the head of Yemen is a supporter of Saudi Arabia and practices the same form of Wahhabism and represses the rights of the Shia and non-Wahhabist Sunni in Yemen. And so they threw him out. And now that's what has happened in return. So we're supporting genocide. And that is Hillary supporting genocide. So I believe that this is unacceptable. And also, if you want to have a complete destruction of Syria once and for all and have it end up as like a Libya, have a no-fly zone. If it weren't for Russia entering and destroying those thousands, thousands of tanks, today Syria would be a completely failed state. We also found out from the outstanding reporter, Hirsch, that it was not Syrians Assad that was using chemical weapons against the citizens. It were the rebels, and she would have been aware of that. Dennis Kucinich says this. I just got this from Dennis. The most consequential statement by former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was her pronouncement of a no-fly zone over Syria that could, quote, save lives and hasten the end of the conflict. That a no-fly zone would provide safe zones on the ground was in the best interest of the people on the ground in Syria. Well, it would be none of the above. The U.S. attempt to impose a no-fly zone in Syria would be, as Secretary Clinton once cautioned a Goldman Sachs audience, quote, kill a lot of Syrians. That's according to her speech to Goldman Sachs, which was kept secret. And according to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dunford, would lead to a war with Russia. If the United States had not been invited into the country to establish a no-fly zone, such an action is, in fact, an invasion and an act of war. Remember, Russia is there by an invitation by Assad. The United States and all of the countries are there illegally. It is abundantly clear from our dark alliance with Saudi Arabia and our conduct in support of jihadists in Syria that our current leaders have learned nothing from Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya as we prepare to plunge headlong into the abyss of a world war. Our international relations are built upon lies to promote regime changes, the fantasy of an unipolar world ruled by America, and a blank check for the national security state. That's from Dennis Kucinich. Now let's go over to our conference line and say hello to Richard Gale, one of our scholars, and he is here to give us some of his thoughts. Hi, Richard.
Hey. How are you? Yeah, we're going to take a look and see what we might expect of Hillary Clinton presidency, and based not only just on the record of her husband and the record that she supports, but her own record, both as senator and secretary of state. And I thought we might also kind of look at who she surrounds herself by, because these are the people that are they're the foot soldiers to actually implement the bills, the policies, the strategies, for a president. And so we can get a good sense and a wonderful view of what a president would do by the people that they surround themselves and who they select. And so I think in that regard, one thing I would like to state is that I think both as a senator and as a secretary of state, Hillary Clinton's focus has really been on international policies and foreign relations rather than domestic policies. So I would expect that we can see her attention being far more focused overseas rather than on policies at home. Whether a person considers her to have been a good Secretary of State or a horrible Secretary of State really doesn't matter, but I think that's where her emphasis would be. And because as Secretary of State, she was responsible for aid to developing countries, promoting trade, free trade. That's one reason why she strongly favors the TPP and these other trade agreements that are hand out to the multinational corporations, and in addition to the State Department's relationship with the Department of Defense and our overseas military adventures. So I think in this way, we're going to expect to see Hillary is going to be the perfect Trojan horse for the neocon Republicans. And we see that already with people like George, H.W. Bush, Rumsfeld, Kissinger, Robert Kagan, and Paul Wolfowitz and William Kristol, who are all architects of the neocon imperialistic strategy. They are all on board with Hillary Clinton over Trump now. Even from the Bush administration, there's Richard Armitage, Henry Paulson, the other hard right Republican economist Christine Todd Whitman, they have all endorsed Hillary, and that should tell us something. That should really give us a clue of what we might expect from her presidency. Who's she looking at as her possible Pentagon chief? Michelle Fournier, a devoted neocon with a very aggressive militaristic ambitions. She's a very close ally of Robert Kagan. Another is what's quite interesting are her candidates for her administration are primarily women, but these are not women who are going to be Gloria Steinems or Jane Goodalls or people who really value life. They're people like Amanda Sloat and Julian Smith, both former officials in the State Department, who then went on to work in high official executive levels in the private intelligence security firms. Who would she have for the Secretary of State? Well, some might say that she might keep John Kerry, but it seems like the person she's really going after is William Burns. He's a very close associate with Condoleezza Rice. He was Bush's ambassador to Russia. He's a hardcore neocon and kind of, with an aggressive attitude towards Russia. And he was also a very close associate of Hillary with an elitist club known as the Fogby Bottom. Another candidate would be, There's nothing ruling out. There's no law that prevents Bill Clinton from becoming Secretary of State, for that matter. And with Hillary, who can tell? And then there's, of course, Susan Rice, who's probably in the running on that one. Now, all these individuals, plus Kagan's wife, Victoria Nuland, who know of, they all favor increased aggressive posturing against Russia. They want to escalate our military activity in the Middle East, especially against Assad and ISIS, but ISIS alone in Iraq, not in Syria. They want to increase our aggressive posturing against Iran, and they're going to simply turn a blind eye away from any Israeli encroachment to further consume what remains of Palestinian land. She's on record stating of her, favoring a no-fly zone. And we might remember back in 2009 when Obama was in Prague, and he stated that, quote, a world free of nuclear weapons. And yet nuclear weapons have increased under Obama more than any other president in history. And again, Hillary is a big supporter of this. She stepped up the aggression against Russia by further militarizing Ukraine. And right now, and that what we'll probably see is more of Ukraine, if it ever becomes economically stable, will become a larger hub for NATO. And so she was Secretary of State, there was the largest buildup of military on Russia's border since the Cold War. So I think we're going to be this, just in terms of what we might look at in terms of America's stance in the world on foreign policy and foreign relations. All these critics and skeptics who have been predicting that we will see more wars, or the likelihood of wars, under a Clinton administration, even more so than under a Trump administration. I think there's very, very strong evidence for that. So that's just on what I kind of was coming up on the foreign policy front. She's been speaking repeatedly on global warming and climate change. And we might remember that her current main campaign manager, John Podesta, was Obama's climate change advisor.
And chief of staff.
Pardon me?
He was also his chief of staff at one time.
And chief of staff. And he was very big. And he is he's very well be in the running to be her Secretary of Energy. There's a lot of talk on that, on him taking that role. But I think it's fair to say that Hillary really doesn't truly understand climate change, nor global warming, nor the magnitude of the threats it poses. I mean, she can know the talking points. She can know the tipping points that she's listed in some of her speeches and talks. But that doesn't translate as having a deep understanding. And we can even put that same criticism to Al Gore, who right now is just another corporatist, who deeply believes that capitalism is going to save us from environmental catastrophes due to global warming. I mean, that last TED talk that he gave not too long ago, he's very, very clear that, she's really very much part of that. It's and that would explain why it's a blind, ignorant, denialist kind of belief that we can still invest in, as she would like to do, in increasing our oil and natural gas drilling, including our hydrofracking. And she voted for all the offshore drilling in 2006 and to increase that in the Gulf. We know the Clinton Foundation has received tons of money, oil money, mostly from ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips. So I don't think we're going to really see the kind of Marshall Plan, as Rabbi Michael Lerner would say, that's really required in this nation to get off of fossil fuels and very rapidly and quickly develop, go into clean renewables, although she gives lip service to that. But, you can't play both games and be on both sides of the field. And that's basically what she's posing. So I don't think we can expect very much progress happening at all in climate change, tackling the problems of climate change.
Richard Gill, thank you for being with us today. Okay, I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Hopefully that we will ponder and think about the danger of just doing the same thing we've done over and over and over again. And hence, we have no progressive platform of unified voices today, and that's what we have to have for the future. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.